From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello and welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
By the time anyone hears this, it's going to be early June and field day is just going to be a couple of weeks away. So I would like you, Joel, to opine, if you will. I've been waiting to use that word.
Oh, good.
Opine on the topic of field day antennas, because that's a big one. People are concerned.
It is, and pine feeds right into the trees.
Well,
you should use the supports.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Good job. Okay, well, field day is one of my favorite operating events. It has a lot of, in addition to being fun, it's a wonderful way to introduce new hams, and even those that aren't hams yet, to amateur radio and what it is all about. Last year, I enjoyed running a get-on-the-air station at our local club and introduced a whole bunch of younger and not so young people into ham radio, and they all had a wonderful time, and so did I. But it's always a big challenge to pull together a number of stations for the event, especially planning the logistics to have everything you will need at a remote location. Typically, I mean, you can do field day from home. I've done that. I've done it from home. I had to go to a wedding in halfway across the country one time. I did field day. Nancy and I did field day together, coming back in the car.
Now, you're dedicated.
Well, there weren't many stations, radio stations to listen to there, so talk to hams on
the Nancy is dedicated, yes.
Nancy was willing to
tolerant.
Tolerant, that's good. That's a better term, yes. So you can do field day a number of different ways, but the traditional way is to go out in the field to simulate setting up a station in, say, emergency conditions, although that's not an official focus of it, but it's clear that that's one of the things you're doing is you're preparing to be able to set up an independent operation outside of your normal environment.
And that requires an antenna.
At least an antenna. Most field day operations from clubs and individuals are more than one station at a time, although you can do one station as well. And there's some advantages to that, by the way. So I think you have to have two stations to be able to have one of these get-on-the-air stations, which doesn't count towards your station count, but the contacts count towards your score, if you're worried about scores, which some people do.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be not a contest, but some people are very interested in the scores and how
I've been with those clubs that are extremely competitive, yes.
So especially with your neighboring clubs and other towns and so forth. For years, one of our local clubs had a trailer with a tilt-up tower and tri-band Yagi ready to go, and they took it up to a truck and see if it still worked from last year, and off they'd go and crank it up, and there they'd be 60-foot tower with a three-band Yagi.
But what would you recommend for the average ham that doesn't have a tilt-up tri-band Yagi?
Well, I must say we didn't use any Yagis last year, and we had we didn't work the whole period because we had some operating time constraints due to neighbors and so forth. But we used wire antennas that we could put up on fairly easy to install temporary poles. We had a number of, I think we had three poles and a tree and a corner of a house that we used for supports. And one of the poles supported antennas going in two different directions. So we used basically dipole antennas. In fact, I made a 2015 and 10 tri-band dipole coupled resonator type. I described it in a QST article last year. And that was one of the antennas we used at our field day. Another one was a coupled resonator 80 and 40 meter antenna. So we had a 2015 and 10 and an 80 and 40 something else. I don't even remember what the other one was. We had three antennas and three stations, and we sort of shifted frequencies and tried to keep out of each other's way as best we could. And it worked out reasonably well. We didn't really have any interstation interference problems. And by the way, you can use a single antenna, multi-band antenna for multiple stations. The tri-band Yagi is good for this, as is the tri-band dipole that I had. You can share a multi-band antenna, such as a tri-band Yagi or my tri-band coupled resonator, on three bands at three different stations at the same time by using a triplexer and bandpass filters to separate the signals. And they all can go into the same antenna without bothering each other. In fact, there'll probably be less interference than if you had a separate antenna right next to it, less coupling.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those for sale in QST, in fact.
There have been articles on how to build your own, and they're also available commercially. So that's a possibility. The only issue with the Yagi, of course, is it can only point in one direction at a time. So all three stations have to agree on where they want to point it. Actually, as we discussed last time, the higher frequency bands are not quite as good as they might be. So
that's true.
20, 15, and 10 would probably not be my prime three bands right now for this kind of thing. But for the other thing is with Field Day, you're talking about within the country primarily, or at least the continent. So Canada, U.S., Mexico are the primary stations. You can work DX, but DX stations are not particularly participating in this. And you don't have to worry about, as in some contests, like working different ARL sections. You just need to make contacts. So your signal has to go someplace.
Yes.
And as long as it goes someplace and there's somebody to talk to, you can talk with them. So, you know, perhaps having a beam is not as advantageous as it would be for some other operating events that you need to get particular directions or distances. But it certainly helps. It gets you a stronger signal. The other thing about Field Day is almost everybody's running 100 watts or less. You don't have the big signals very often that you have to compete with. So, and everybody's looking to talk to you, and you're looking to talk to them, and it all works out very nicely. So you do have to consider directional properties of antennas. You want to have antennas that point in directions where the people are that you want to talk to, but you don't have to talk to any particular people. So you want to my theory is you talk towards the biggest density of people. So from the northeast, I tend to have antennas pointed towards the southwest or a little north of that to give me the most, like a dipole pattern will cover most of the United States down into Mexico and up into Canada with a single dipole pointed in the right direction. Now, of course, being able to turn it gives you a little more flexibility. But as long as you can keep talking to stations and you don't care who they are or where they are, you don't really need to get particular coverage of other places. So simple antennas work very well with things. The other thing is you're not looking for real long-range contacts. You don't want to necessarily try to work into Central Asia from Connecticut. You just want to work into Illinois or Indiana or one of those places. So that what that says is you can have lower antennas.
I was going to ask you about that.
With
How high do they have to be? Yeah.
So on the lower frequency bands, particularly if you have antennas that are, the target would be a quarter wavelength high. That's 67 feet on 80 meters, but it'll work well at 40 feet high also, and that's a good height for 40 meters, and it's a very good height for 20, 15, and 10 as well. So it doesn't have to be very high to be effective. Now, we used 40-foot push-up masts or sectional masts that we put together with a lot of people on guy wires, hauled them up, and used halyards to pull the antennas up. That worked very well. This was a first time that we did Field Day from that location, so we were kind of playing it by ear, and everything came out about right. But again, we tried to orient the antennas to give us most coverage we could get on the rest of the country.
Now, I'm thinking of the solo ham who just wants to go out into a field and operate Field Day. Maybe there are no trees nearby. How about a vertical? Could he put up a vertical antenna and throw some radials down on the ground?
Sure. A lot of people do that. It is my contention that that's a lower desirability than a horizontal antenna. The reason is the vertical antenna has no radiation going upward. So what that means is you have very low likelihood of working the stations within a couple hundred miles that you would get with a low horizontal antenna. So that you're kind of cutting yourself off from the low-hanging fruit by not being able to talk near in. We have a sideband net in one of our clubs that I've checked into from time to time, and it didn't take people long to figure out that the people that had horizontal antennas got through and the people who had vertical ones didn't.
Yes.
That's kind of an oversimplification, but that's about the way it works. So, you know, the vertical will work, but it's more optimum for stations at some distance than it is for stations that are nearby. And of course, stations at some distance, you'll be weaker and you'll hear them weaker than other people. So, you know, if you have the capability to put up a vertical, by definition, you have the structure you need to hang an inverted V dipole.
Well, that's true, yes.
You just put a pulley on the top. In fact, you could try both, I guess, but I can't imagine that you wouldn't be happier with a horizontal antenna. If you only have one, it can be something like a G5RV and a tuner, or a center-fed ZEP and a tuner that you can use on different bands, because you'll want to be able to do different bands. Again, in the daytime, you'll want to be on the higher frequency bands. Pretty much 40 meters works well for Field Day, even in the daytime, because you don't have to talk real far away. But at night, you probably won't make a lot of contacts on 20, 15, and 10. And again, you're restricted into the five major bands, so you don't have the benefit of 30 and 17. You've got to go where the rules allow. VHF in some areas where there's a lot of activity can be useful, and occasionally there are openings or sporadic-y kinds of things that get you some contacts. But in my experience, I wouldn't dedicate a station to VHF unless you have a lot of stations because, you know, if you have two or three stations running and you want to keep them making contacts all the time, you'll be better on HF, on the HF band, in my opinion. Now, some people, if you have an 8 transmitter kind of thing, you're kind of stuck. You have to have people on all the bands, including VHF. Most people on VHF use small Yagis and rotators or have a rotating mast that they can turn with their hand or something. And that can work, but it's hard to keep making contacts the whole time. But on the other hand, if you're competing against other 8 transmitter stations, they're in the same boat. So,
well, you know, getting back to your example of the inverted V antenna, something occurred to me. You see for sale those telescoping mass. So in other words, you could, I'm thinking again now, the lonely ham who's out in the middle of some grassy field, you could raise that mast. You could have the two legs of the dipole sloping down to how close to the ground would you say?
What? Oh, they can go within, you don't want them touching the ground, but within a foot or two with no problem.
A foot or two. And then feed it at the center with 450-ohm windowed line to an antenna tuner, and in theory, you could operate that single inverted V on a number of bands, right?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. The disadvantage of that in general is that on the higher frequency bands, you tend to get more high-angle radiation with that than you would with a horizontal dipole. But on field day, that's not that big a disadvantage because you want to work close in stations. The other thing you can do with that, and those two legs of the dipole can be in place of guy wires, the upper guy wires. That's
true. Yeah.
Works very well. In fact, something I recommend for people who want to do NVIS emergency communication is a pair of parallel dipoles, one for 80 and one for 40 meters, perpendicular, serving as four guy wires and hooked together in parallel and run with a single coax cable down the center of the pole. The antenna is low enough that it actually is almost omnidirectional. The dipole has nulls off the end, but they only are very deep when you get it up perhaps close to a half a wavelength or so. At lower heights, they're noticeable, but they're down maybe 6 dB instead of 20 dB. So it's almost usable as a omnidirectional antenna on 80 and 40. And because they're perpendicular, they don't couple to each other, so you avoid most of the problems people have with parallel connected dipoles in terms of interaction and so forth. So that's another antenna that's very good, but that's strictly pretty much two-band antenna.
Yes.
And doing it, as you suggest, with a window line feed is an excellent way to do it. And even if you don't have supports, you take along some kind of a launcher or device. You can usually, it depends on what part of the country you're in. Where I live, you can always find a tree to get a tennis ball stuck in.
Yes.
So.
Well, thank you, Joel. Let's take a break here from DX Engineering, and I have a question for you on the other side here.
Okay.
Remember your first contact? The excitement of that first CQ? The exhilaration of making your first QSO? At DX Engineering, we know that feeling too. That's why we've committed to making your on-air experience the very best it can be. DX Engineering ships quickly, which means less station downtime, and we have free shipping for almost any order over $99. We've recently expanded our inventory, so you don't have to wait for the gear you need. DX Engineering has introduced all new radio products and revived legendary brands, all with the goal of helping you enjoy amateur radio. Most importantly, the DX Engineering team is here to help you. You've got a team of highly experienced hams ready to work out technical issues, answer questions, and help you optimize your station performance. That excitement you felt from the first contact, it can happen again and again with help from DX Engineering. DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we're back, Joel. And I have that promised question for you.
Okay.
This one is from Greg KM5GT, and he's asking, I'm pulling together my 12-month second antenna plan. Now, this is a guy with a plan.
Yes.
I now have an 80-meter off-center fed dipole, a height of about 50 feet. Given our current solar conditions, I'm considering adding 43-foot-tall vertical monopoles, or a monopole, I think he means, with perhaps a receiving loop to enhance reception on lower frequency bands, or perhaps getting some directivity on higher bands by adding one of the compact wire multiband Yagis for 20 meters and higher bands. What do you recommend, given that I want to chase DX? Now, wait, we're not done. A constraint I have is due to my topography. While I'm at a comfortable 810-foot elevation, my back is to Lookout Mountain, Tennessee at 2,300 feet. I have a reasonably good shot to Europe, but not to the Pacific. So far, I've only had one contact with Japan. So, if I were to point due west, I'm pointing right at the mountain. So, what's his plan, Joel? You must have a plan.
Well, of course, the first thing you want to do is move to the top of the mountain. But if you can't do that, maybe we can work around it in some way. Now, but the first thing is a little more data is really required. Even though the mountain is behind you, the takeoff angle that gets over it depends on the horizontal distance between you and the mountain. So I would look at a topo map and measure the distance from your location to the top of the mountain, the peak, and compute the elevation angle that will clear the peak. Now, if you're far enough away from the mountain, even though it's there, if you can get across it at, say, only 5 or 10 degrees of elevation, you can get a reasonably good signal in that direction, even though it looks dramatic as you look at the horizon. So I would consider it feasible if you can do that. If you can't, of course, you can still get over it, but the signals will not go as far as you've discovered. So, you know, it could be that your off-center fed dipole on 20 meters has a null in that direction, which sort of exacerbates the problem. Now, either of the two antennas you talk about can be effective, but I think the considerations about which will be more effective depend on how high you can get the Yagi and how good a ground system you can put at the base of the vertical, which will help determine the efficiency and capabilities of both.
Yes.
It also depends to a certain extent on when you can operate, which will determine what bands are likely to be most effective. All things being equal, if you can operate during daylight, 30 meters and higher frequencies will be your best bet, with most of the activity lately being on 20 and 17. I don't think, or perhaps hope, that conditions will get a lot worse than they have been lately. And most every day there are lots of signals here from Europe and even some from Africa and Asia on 20 and 17.
That's true.
And on some days, 15 meters out to the Pacific is actually open too, I guess.
Yeah, on occasion I've heard some.
It's not as frequent as it used to be, but it's not all gone. It's just not as likely. On the other hand, if you work mostly after sunset, if you're one of those people that has to work during the day and hasn't lived long enough to be retired as I am, the higher bands will tend to be dead at night.
Yes.
And you will want to do better on 80 and 40. So in that case, the 43-foot monopole would probably be a better choice. And while 160 meters can be used with a 43-foot monopole, it's something of a fight to get that to be matched properly, and it's also less efficient because it's really shorter than it wants to be and requires a bigger and better ground system to be more effective. Now, that antenna can work on 20, 30, and 17 meters as well, but the beam will have more gain than the vertical if it's up at least 30 feet. Of course, what I would rather do than choose between them is I'd put them up, put both up, and you can switch between them and you can find out. And sometimes you'll want one and sometimes you'll want the other, as we discussed. And I don't, you know, that could be your 14-month plan instead of your 12-month plan or whatever. But so I'm sorry that there isn't a clear answer. A big plus for the beam is that it can fill in the gaps in the off-center fed pattern, because on 20 meters and up, the pattern has multiple lobes and deep nulls, and if those happen to be towards where the stations are that you want to work, you're not going to be able to work them with your dipole now. But on 20 meters, your off-center fed dipole will actually have 12 lobe peaks at different azimuth angles, and if your dipole at 50 feet is higher than your small Yagi, you'll actually get more gain probably at the low angles from the off-center fed dipole than you will with the Yagi in those directions. But the directions in between where there are nulls, you won't. So, you know, they're good complementary in that way. So don't take down the OCF. And that actually can work well on, reasonably well on 40 and potentially on 80 as well. Could stand being a little higher for that.
Yes.
On 80 and 40 meters, well, on 80 meters, the OCF will have a dipole-like pattern, which is good for kind of, you know, not a lot of nulls just off the ends. On 40 meters, there are kind of four broad lobes, so you'll have some gaps there that monopole could fill in also. Now, depending on the elevation angles available in the direction of the mountain, you may get better results at the Pacific going long path or over the North Pole if the direction to the North Pole is on your side of the mountain. You'd have to kind of look at that and see about that azimuth. Now, the thing to remember is that if you're talking about long path, the times that the openings in that direction occur are different than on the short paths. So when people report things on the websites that tell you about stations that are heard, keep in mind they're probably looking at short path. And I would go to voacap.com, vocap, which gives you real-time propagation predictions on each band, and you can select whether you want to go long path or short path. It'll tell you what bands and what times and what percentage of likelihood you will have to make a contact in those directions. You can put in your actual antennas and the antenna you assume for the far end station, and it'll give you the probabilities, or you can also get the signal noise ratio that you'd expect. So I would use those kind of tools to figure out where to point your antennas and what frequencies to try to get around or over the mountain.
Well, that's a plan.
There you go.
Thank you, Joel.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.pxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.